Hello and welcome to The Sun Will Rise. I'm Roshan Mohammed Saleh. Ahead of his speech at the UN General Assembly at the end of this month, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has hinted that he'll cancel the Oslo Accords with Israel. The 1993 Accords led to Israeli recognition of the Palestine Liberation Organization as the so-called legitimate representative of the Palestinian people, and to the establishment of the Palestinian Authority in parts of the West Bank. The agreements were intended to lead to eventual peace between Israel and the Palestinians after a negotiated resolution of their disputes. But more than 20 years on, the vast majority of Palestinians feel that the Oslo Accords have failed. Israel still occupies the West Bank and effectively controls Gaza. It continues to wage warfare on the Palestinian people. It continues to steal their land, and it continues to discriminate against them in all areas of life. Today, we'll be taking a look at the Oslo Accords, and we'll be asking if President Abbas will really cancel them. And if he does, what will be the consequences? But first, here's Mona Kandil with a report from the West Bank.
On the 13th of September 1993, the Palestinian Liberation Organization and Israel signed the Oslo Accords, starting the so-called peace process that was supposed to lead to an independent Palestinian state on the lands that were occupied in 1967 and with Jerusalem al-Quds as its capital. Today, it's being reported that the Palestinians are planning to announce the cancellation of the accords. Palestinian officials expect that President Mahmoud Abbas will reveal that he's no longer bound by the Oslo Accords during the UN General Assembly meeting later this month.
This agreement gave the Palestinian Authority the right to rule the people, but the real sovereignty on the ground remained in the hands of Israel. So this agreement now appears as if it's just a functional sharing arrangement between Israel and the PLO. It's not going to end the occupation.
Israel hasn't honored the agreements with the Palestinians and has refused to allow the establishment of a Palestinian state. In addition, final status issues are still unresolved, such as the Israeli withdrawal, the future of Palestinian refugees, the dismantling of settlements, the transition from autonomy to sovereignty for the Palestinians, and most importantly, the issue of Jerusalem al-Quds. It has become clear to all Palestinians that Tel Aviv was only imposing more facts on ground that have been negatively affecting their lives and their dream for an independent, viable, and contiguous state.
Today, after more than 20 years, the Palestinians have failed to use the previous stage to achieve their goal of independence. The Israeli regime has been using the period to build more Israeli settlements and grab more lands. Israel is widening its grip over the occupied West Bank and allowing Palestinians to live in cantons, killing their dream to have a real state.
According to the Palestinians, the international community, especially which is Israel's main ally, have been playing along with the Israelis at a time they should have held them accountable, at least for the non-stop crimes against Palestinians and violence against their properties. However, the Palestinian Authority believes that it must press ahead to have a wide international recognition of Palestine that will eventually force Israel to end its occupation.
After two decades of signing the Oslo Accords, everything on ground proves that Israel still occupies the West Bank and Jerusalem al-Quds. This is why the majority of the Palestinians argue that President Mahmoud Abbas should annul these accords, even if Tel Aviv would impose further sanctions, especially economic repercussions, against them. For the Sun Will Rise, this is Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
To discuss the Oslo Accords and the legacy, we have two guests in the studio with us today. Jaffa Ramini is a Palestinian writer, commentator and political analyst on Middle Eastern affairs, who's based here in London. And Nasim Ahmed is a staff writer for the Middle East Monitor website and author of the Understanding the Nakba, an insight into the plight of the Palestinians. Welcome, gentlemen, today. Jaffa, if I could start with you and ask you a direct question. Is Mahmoud Abbas really going to say in front of the world at the end of this month that he's cancelled the Oslo Accords or not?
I doubt it. Mahmoud Abbas has ruled because of the Oslo Accord. The Oslo Accord has been nothing but a disaster for the Palestinians and for the Palestinian cause. Since 1993, the settlers in the West Bank have tripled. from 200,000 to just about 700,000. The settlements from about a handful to 115 plus outposts.
Yeah.
The demolition of homes, 20,000 plus. Jerusalem is totally cut off, and the Jerusalemites are facing a very harsh existence. So Mr. Abbas, I have been praying for Mr. Abbas to have the courage and the honesty to say that the Oslo Accords is defunct and to dissolve the PA. So far, he hasn't.
Nassim, do you agree with that? Is he bluffing? And if so, why?
Well, I think he's bluffing. I mean, as a politician, as a leader, you do not say no to 1.1 billion annual budget from the US and the EU. So he's clearly not going to do anything that's going to jeopardize US policy and European policy in Palestine, historical Palestine. So, but I think he is bluffing. He's bluffing because, to me, this sounds like megaphone politics, really. It's a case of the Palestinians' issue is not really on the agenda. Yeah. It's Syria, it's refugees, Syrian refugees, and ISIS, and also the crisis within the Arab world. So the Palestinians' issue seems to be kicked into the long grass, and I think it's his way of saying, look, we are an issue, and there's also an internal dynamics that's taking place, which is to reinvigorate the PLO and have a discussion, marginalize Hamas. So he's kind of making threats to the world. So
but look, I mean, but the signals coming out of Ramallah are clear that he's going to say this. So you're just saying it's a negotiation. You're making a brave prediction. It's a negotiating tactic
that's
to get
right.
the Israelis back at the table.
That's what I think. It's a negotiating tactic to get the international community to actually look at the Palestinian issue, bring it back on the agenda, and also tell the Palestinians, look, you know, we want a greater legitimacy. We want more backing from the Palestinians by, of course, marginalizing Hamas, because Hamas will not be allowed to go into Ramallah and be part of that negotiation, be part of redrafting the PLO. They're not going to be part of that because they will not be allowed to enter into Ramallah. So there's that dimension as well.
Jaffa, do you agree with that analysis?
To a certain point, yes. Look, the PA has done nothing but take our cause backwards. If you have a cause and you believe in it and you are a liberator, you don't compromise. You talk and you take as much as you can and ask for more. This is what Israel has been doing. The PA has played a reactive role to Israel excesses, never a proactive. Why haven't they gone to the International Criminal Court until recently? Why they haven't gone to the United Nations to say, look what Israel is doing in Jerusalem. Look at the expansion of the settlements in Palestine. Look at the theft of land, water resources. 800,000 olive trees uprooted. They have done nothing to stop Israel. They played footsies with Israel. They have security coordination with Israel, which Abbas called sacred.
Yeah.
He actually disowned his own town, Safad. He said, I am not here to regain Safad or any other of the 1948. Mr. Abbas, this is not your own property. How dare you compromise 78% of the historical land of Palestine for the sake of having a state? And if I may hear...
Very quickly, Jaffa, because
sure.
we have to move on.
In 1974, when the PLO was designated by the Arab states as our sole representatives, we, the Palestinians, were never asked.
Okay. All right. Well, brave predictions there that he's actually going to backtrack. Let's see what happens, but we're going to come back to this discussion in a few minutes. As usual, we've been keeping up with what's been trending on Palestine on social media. So here's Camelia Shambayati with the latest news and views.
So I've been looking at the latest trends on Palestine, and on Facebook recently, the Al-Aqsa Mosque was trending as a video emerged showing more than 200 Israeli soldiers storming the holy site in East Al-Quds, Jerusalem, firing rubber bullets and tear gas at Palestinian worshippers. Shots were also heard outside, causing Palestinians to run for cover. Now, here in the UK, prospects for strengthening support for Palestine looks hopeful as Jeremy Corbyn, who is a champion of Palestinian rights, has won leadership of the UK Labour Party. Corbyn's support for Palestinian rights is causing alarm in Israel. Throughout his campaign, pro-Israel groups made extraordinary efforts to smear Corbyn as an anti-Jewish bigot, despite his decades as an anti-racism campaigner. Corbyn has visited Palestine 9 times and also endorses key elements of the boycott, divestment and sanctions campaign against Israel and has called for a two-way arms embargo. Now, I want to bring to your attention this disturbing video of Israeli settler aggression. The International Solidarity Movement released this footage shot in Al-Khalil Hebron of a female settler, Anat Cohen, harassing and insulting an international activist who was helping kids go to school. Anat Cohen is notorious for several attacks on Palestinians and was reported to have attempted to run over the activists in her car. The soldier stationed at the checkpoint nearby was reported to be sympathetic to Cohen and did not intervene, even when repeatedly being asked for help by the activists. And that's all the social media news I have for you this time. Please do follow our social media accounts on Facebook and Twitter, where you can leave your comments.
Nasim, before we continue the discussion about the Oslo Accords, I do want to pick up about something in that report. Jeremy Corbyn victory, new Labour Party leader, somebody who's very staunchly pro-Palestinian, yeah, and historically so. Your reaction to his victory?
No, it's fantastic news. I mean, it's no secret that Jeremy Corbyn is one of the foremost supporters of the Palestinian cause, and he is one of the few politicians who are very, very strong on international law. So I see in his next 4 or 5 years that he will actually push for the implementation of international law. Oslo, one of the weaknesses within Oslo is the fact that it set aside international law. So issues to do with settlements, issues to do with refugees, where there are clear statements about from international law as to what is the right thing to do, that's all been set aside for the Palestinian cause. So I can see Jeremy Corbyn pushing this in the next 4 or 5 years.
And Jafar, I think you've actually met Corbyn in Palestine, is that correct?
Yes, I've met him before then. I met him in one of the meetings for Stop the War Coalition first about 10 years ago. And then my wife and I were visiting Jerusalem, and there he was in Damascus Gate.
So you're happy with his victory?
I'm more than happy. I'm delighted that at last there is a man of principle, a man who knows what he's talking about, and he's willing to back it up and not shy away. My fear is, within the Labour Party, he might not find the backing that he needs for him to do his job.
Okay. All right, let's get back to Oslo and Nasim. So you're both obviously against the Oslo Accords and criticising Abbas quite harshly. Yet he does retain support, doesn't he, in the West Bank especially, but also in Gaza. There was a huge rally, I think, a few years ago in support of Fatah. If all of what you're saying is true, how does he retain this core support amongst Palestinians?
Well, I think it goes with most Arab regimes and Arab leaders, which is that they have to create a facade of legitimacy and a facade of support within their constituents. So,
but he does have his constituency.
Of course he has, but you cannot say the majority of the Palestinians are in support of Abbas. Okay. Majority of the Palestinians are refugees, you know, they're in diaspora. Yeah. So given that's the case, they were actually marginalized, and that's one of the failures of Oslo, the fact that refugees and the Palestinians in diaspora were not actually asked about it. So Oslo was actually born as an illegitimate process in that sense, because it left out the greatest constituency of the Palestinians, which is people like our guest here, and also the Palestinians, 7 million Palestinians around the world. So yes, he can show that he has support within Ramallah, but Palestinians are not just Ramallah. Palestinians are Gazans, Palestinians are all across the world.
And there's this thing about the Oslo Accords recognizing the PLO as the sole legitimate representative of the Palestinian people.
Of course.
And they're not.
There are more Palestinians. There are more Palestinians who are, as I said, in diaspora, who are not just simply part of the PLO, but there's greater numbers outside.
Nasim, what do you make of Abbas's tactic seems to be to internationalise the issue and get states all around the world to recognise Palestine as a state as a means of putting pressure on Israel. What do you think of that tactic?
I think, again, it's kind of a good tactic, but it's another reactive tactic in the sense that Palestinians throughout history, if there's one thing that is true, which is that they always negotiate from a point of weakness. I mean, Oslo came from a point of weakness as well. Mm. Here you had the Palestinians, Arafat, who was kicked out of Lebanon, and then he was marginalized because of his support for Saddam Hussein. So it was because of that, as a result, he was forced into a negotiation into Oslo. So he throughout, even after during Oslo, we see Palestinians coming to the table in a very weak position. So it's good in the sense that it puts pressure on Israel. If there is a good time, then this is the best time in a sense, because Netanyahu is the most aggressive, most extreme Israeli politician that we have in recent history. So he will be someone who even the West cannot negotiate with. So they can show we are more moderate, we are more respectful of Oslo and will abide by Oslo more so than Netanyahu. So this is another way, if they wanted to, push the Oslo Accords further and show that Netanyahu is really the person who is undermining Oslo, undermining the two-state solution. They could do that.
Sure. Jeff, we only have about a minute left in this section, but just a comment on that, on his tactic to internationalize the Palestine issue and get states to recognize Palestine as a state?
Well, he succeeded in that, at least. But the question is, what kind of a state? Do we, the Palestinian, want a state in 20% of the historical land of Palestine with no power at all, Israel holding all the keys, and they tell us what to do and we do it? Of course we don't. Mm. The most important thing that nobody touches on is we do exist, the Palestinian nation. There is about 12 million of us. Israel brushed us aside at the beginning with the land with no people, for the people without your land. Okay. But we're here. At least our brothers in Gaza and Ramallah should ask us, what do we want? Okay. Very simple.
Right. Well, we'll address that point in a few minutes' time. Last week, the Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu visited the UK for talks with the British Prime Minister David Cameron, but hundreds of protesters were also there to greet him, demanding that he be arrested for war crimes. Here's what happened.
Scuffles broke out between police and demonstrators as crowds gathered in front of Downing Street to voice their anger at an official two-day visit to the UK by Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu. Protesters were upset that Netanyahu had been provided with full diplomatic immunity, despite his role in the bloody attack on Gaza in summer 2014, which killed thousands of Palestinians. A petition calling for his arrest had garnered over 110,000 signatures, but to no avail.
The fact of the matter is the British government supports Israel. Without the British government's support, Israel wouldn't be able to continue to function in its current form. We arm them, we diplomatically and politically support them, we give them money, all sorts of trading links, which is what they're going to be discussing today. That is an outrage. That really has to end.
During the meeting, Netanyahu said action was needed to stop the Middle East disintegrating under the threat of what he called militant Islamists. Discussions also focused on the crisis in Syria and also on Iran, particularly the nuclear deal bitterly opposed by the Zionist leader. Mr. Cameron, meanwhile, said the UK remained staunch in its defence of Israel's so-called right to exist and to defend itself. He also praised the close relationship between Britain and Israel and the growing economic and commercial ties between them.
Ripples are being made. From ripples, the waves are being made. Change is coming. We need to keep up the pressure. Keep up the pressure on the government, and one day that change will take place. We just need to keep doing what we're doing.
Despite David Cameron going against the majority of British public opinion on this occasion, protesters have vowed to make the UK a no-go zone for Israeli officials until justice for Palestine is achieved.
Jeff, I'm not sure whether you were at that protest last week. Obviously, a lot of people very angry over 110,000 signatures on that petition.
Right.
Protesters out Downing Street. Yet at the same time, ties between Britain and Israel are getting closer.
Yes, but we don't expect anything else. This is a conservative government. And Mr. Cameron, the Prime Minister, is on record as saying, I'm not only proud to be a conservative, but I'm proud to be a staunch Zionist and supporter of Israel. And Israel, in me, will have indestructible support.
Yeah.
So we, the people, i.e. the British people, over 5,000 of us were there in front of Downing Street. He did not take any notice.
Yeah.
Business as usual. And what irked me as well, that the media said there were only 300 of us there. Because, of course, any opposition to Israel is a taboo.
Yeah.
And Mr. Netanyahu played the same card, the victim. I am there, I'm your first shield of support against the Islamists. He did not say that he, Britain, and the United States have created the Islamists.
In a way, it was quite a brazen kind of ignoring of public opinion, wasn't it, happened last week?
Just goes to show the real disdain establishment figures have for the British population. I mean, you have polls after polls which show that the British people, by and large, rate Israel as one of the worst countries in the world. Yeah. Even though we have this idea it's a democracy, it's always in the polls as one of the lowest three with North Korea and countries like that. So despite that, you'll have British governments fawning to actually shake hands with Netanyahu. Yeah. So it's a bit of a disgrace as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I want to conclude this discussion about the West Bank and Fatah and Abbas. Jaffa, you know, things are going quite badly in the West Bank, aren't they? You know, Al-Aqsa, settlements, everything. I could name everything under the sun. At some point, something's going to give. It's going to blow, isn't it?
It is. And I hope it doesn't, because we are not prepared for it. Since the division between Fatah and Hamas, Abbas has said no arms resistance.
Mm.
So,
will there be a return to armed resistance?
Not armed. I hope there will be civil resistance where the Palestinians down tools, the Palestinians boycott Israel, they don't buy any services or products from Israel. And most importantly, I hope that Fatah and Hamas will stop playing this football game between them, blaming each other for what's happening, leave partisan interests aside and look for the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is unity for the Palestinians.
Briefly, why no armed resistance? Why are you against that?
Because it's like David and Goliath, if I may use that. We are against the fourth most powerful army in the world.
You don't feel it's going to be effective.
We have no arms, we have no air force, no army, no navy. Even the police force is trained by Americans and pitted against us.
Yeah.
So I don't want to see a bloodbath in Palestine.
Yeah.
I want to see a peaceful solution and for the world to see that we are really not the aggressors, we are the victims.
Nassim, just to labour this point, because I have heard Palestinians talking about this quite a lot in recent weeks. People are talking about a return to armed resistance because the peaceful route just hasn't worked.
Well, it hasn't worked in the sense that the Intifada worked. Intifada brought the Palestinians onto the negotiating table. They gave them something to actually leverage with. So at the moment, they have nothing to actually leverage with. So, and the only way the occupation will end and you'll have Israel actually coming to the negotiating table is if the international community, in a sense, take a step back, because the only reason Oslo is continuing and the PA is surviving and Israel can do what it wants to do is because occupation is free. There's no cost to Israel. So if 1.1 billion was taken away, withdrawn by the international community, the obligation, the responsibility falls on Israel to actually keep security and maintain peace in Palestine. And when that falls on their back, then this becomes an electoral issue for the Israelis. At the moment, the occupation, Palestine, is not even an a campaigning issue.
And if I may add here about the first intifada. The first intifada happened before Hamas was formed and before the PA was formed. So these people came on and hijacked what the people inside Palestine were doing and called it their own.
Okay. All right, I've got more questions, but we've run out of time as usual. So thanks a lot, guys, for coming in today. Okay.
Thank you very much.
That's all the time we've got for today. Once more, thank you to all our guests. And don't forget to get busy, please, on social media, telling us what you think of the issues that we raised in this programme. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next time for more discussion and analysis on Palestine. Bye-bye.